Prepare to be astonished!
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to another thrilling edition of Adventures in History. And since I'm the first one talking, that obviously means Alana is not here. So, Alana, shame on you, because we've got a fantastic guest. I'm really excited, although there were supposed to be two of you here.
I know. One of us had to stay to work the store. So.
So we've got Adrian Morrison. And in case you thought I stuttered there, it's Adrian.
It is Adrian, A-D-R-I-N.
And just, not Adrian.
Yep. So that's how if I introduce myself as Adrian, that means that I don't plan on seeing you again. So
is that really the clue? I love that.
If I say Adrian, then that's just, it's usually easier than having to explain the rest of it.
Now, I'm trying to remember back to the first time we met, whether you said Adrian or Adrian.
Oh, I was probably careful to say Adrian. I'm not sure.
That's funny. That's like anybody that calls the office and asks for McAndrew. I kind of know I don't want to talk to them.
There you go.
Because see? I'm like, they're just reading my name on a website or something. Yeah, they don't know that it's really Mac.
And if I really don't, I'll just go with Eric, my husband's name. I'll just say that.
It's just Eric.
There you go.
But then see, they'll call him and they'll be like, hey, Eric, I talked to you. And he'll be like, what are you talking about?
He's okay. He's always the phone person. So
he's the phone person. Okay. So you are, first and foremost, we know you from the Port Hopper.
Port Hopper. Yep. Port Hopper in downtown Astoria.
All right. We're going to talk a lot about that building and the things you did to it and the business. But let's get the stuff out of the business part of this out of the way first. First, I got to say, you got to come to the Heritage Museum as soon as you can and go through the temporary exhibits, Double Vision and Quiet on Set, because they're going to disappear in just a few weeks. So you better get in soon. All right. But the history highlights, things that happened on January 12th, tomorrow, as always, icebreakers. And conversation starters or conversation around the dinner table. So these are the things that happened on January 12th, 1773. The first public museum established in North America, the colonies, because it was the colonies, in Charleston, South Carolina, the Charleston Museum.
Oh, nice.
Have you ever been to Charleston?
I have.
Ooh, tell me, because I have not.
It was a while ago. I was actually in the Navy when I was there. So I was stationed in Goose Creek, South Carolina, I believe. If I get that wrong, I apologize, but we would go just kind of check it out. So I've been there. I don't remember much about it, but I have been there. It's a charming little area.
First, I'm amused at the name of the town you just said, Goose Creek.
It sounds
like a made up name.
I'm pretty sure, now I'm getting it confused with Goose Hollow in Portland, but I'm pretty sure it was Goose Creek. So, yeah.
It is. We've decided there's a place in South Carolina called Goose Creek, yeah. Regardless of whether there is or not. There is now. I have not been to this museum or even been to their website, but I'm kind of fascinated at the very first museum in America.
Well, someone's got to be the first.
I know. I hope it's like on their sign or something. All right. 1900, Utopian Freeland Colony is founded on Whidbey Island in Washington State. It's an attempt to create a cooperative society based on socialist ideals. Obviously it failed. 1906, Football Rules Committee legalizes the forward pass. I kind of have a hard idea picturing football without the pass.
I don't know what the forward pass is, so.
See, I actually put that one in for Alana because she's a football fan. I'm not. I'm a baseball guy. So, all right, then we'll move along. 1932, Haiti Wyatt Caraway becomes the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate. She's a Democrat from Arkansas, so way to go, Arkansas.
Nice.
1932, though, that, and I had to think about it, but there was somebody elected to the from Washington to, I think it was Washington, to Congress, but she was in the House of Representatives. So this is the first woman elected. There was somebody else that whose husband passed away and she was appointed. So this is the first one elected. 1954, Howard Stern is born. So the only reason I put that one in is because, fun fact, I grew up in north of New York City, and that's where Howard Stern really exploded, was when he was a DJ in New York City. And fun fact, he actually went to my sister's prom.
Oh, cool.
There was somebody in her class that won a contest that Howard Stern, the radio DJ, would be your date to your prom. So it's the weirdest thing. Like, if she's got pictures of her prom and things, there's Howard Stern.
There you go.
1962, Operation Ranch Hand begins, a U.S. Air Force operation to spray South Vietnamese forests with defoliants such as Agent Orange. Yes, we don't think that one's a very good one. 1964, Jeff Bezos is born. We got no comments. All right. 1967, James Bedford becomes the first American to have his remains cryogenically frozen in hopes of a later reanimation.
What year was that?
1967.
I guess, yeah, okay.
So I'm always amused at the rumors that Walt Disney had his head frozen. All right, 1971, All in the Family premieres on CBS featuring the first toilet flush on TV.
Oh.
I didn't remember until I saw this that the toilet flush thing was going on. I know that he talked about the bathroom and that was kind of shocking. And just, well, the way he talked was kind of shocking. So are you old enough to have any memories of All in the Family? I don't think, you're probably not.
No.
Because I'm right on the cusp.
I mean, I know it was one of those things that would be kind of on sometimes, but I don't know that we ever really like watched it.
See, my memories, because I had to have been fairly young, obviously 71, but I remember my parents watching it and the kids would be in the room and they would laugh and we wouldn't know why. So we'd all laugh too,
yeah.
But we had no idea what my parents were laughing about. All right, 1995, the murder trial against O.J. Simpson begins in L.A., but the thing I think the history highlighted, I think had the most impact on history, and I put this one in anticipating that Alana would argue with me about it, so you're welcome to argue if you'd like. 1939, Timely Comics, later Marvel Comics, founded by American publisher Martin Goodman in New York.
Well, that's pretty big.
So, I mean, there was DC with Superman, but I kind of feel like, especially with the movies and everything,
I mean, it's a Marvel. Whole universe now.
That's right. It is. It's a complete, so there it is. All right. So that's our history highlight of the day. All right. So let's talk to you. I met you about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, about 2 years ago.
And you were the gift shop manager up at the Astoria Column.
I was.
Which is now celebrating its 100th anniversary this year.
I know. That's pretty crazy.
But what's your background? How'd you get to Astoria? So where did you grow up and what led this path, crazy path to get here?
It's a nutshell version is that we moved around a lot growing up. So I was born in Houston, Texas, but we were only there for a couple of years. We weren't in the military. A lot of people think we were military, but it was my stepdad's job actually moved us around a lot. So we moved about once a year. We moved all over the country. So I've kind of seen a little bit of everything. I don't really have like a hometown really.
So what was his job that you moved that often?
He worked for, it was kind of like an umbrella corporation that kind of like essentially grocery stores, like Safeway, kind of things like that. And he would just kind of go around. He was essentially like a traveling store manager and they would go and get their profits up and going, things like that. And then they'd kind of move them on somewhere else. And so he essentially, once it was, they're like, all right, we got another place over here. So we'd go from Alabama to California to New York, Connecticut. We've been all over. So I'm pretty much about every, like once a year, sometimes more, sometimes less, we kind of packed up and moved on, which was a lot for, I'm the oldest of six kids. So that was a
wow
fun little time.
So, you know, I've met some of the military kids here working, you know, friends with my son and working with my scout troop back when I was the scoutmaster and helper there. And I'm always stunned at the military kids, how easy they kind of come into a community, make friends. They know they're staying for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
You know you're only going to be there for a year. What is that like as a kid? I mean, did you make friends or were you just kind of keeping everybody at arm's length?
It started off kind of the arm's length just because it was always, as a kid, it's devastating having to move. Like you lose your friends. Like you, I don't know how many times I told my parents, I'm just going to stay here, you know? And I was like 8 years old, you know? Mm-hmm. But it actually, I think what happened is when I got to junior high, I signed up for an arts class, thinking I was going to take like ceramics or something like that. Turned out to be theater arts, which I was not super thrilled about, but it kind of got me out of my bubble. So ever since then, it was kind of something that helped me kind of reach out. And we always thought we were going to stay there for a while. So in my head, I always thought like, oh, like this will be the time. And of course it never was, but so it kind of helped. And I think that kind of helped me later on in reaching out to people. So.
Okay. Yeah. As I mean, now you're an adult, so obviously, but you don't give any of those vibes.
Yeah.
Somebody that keeps people at an arm's length here. So moving around so much, hey, where did you actually graduate from high school? If you did,
I graduated in Millbrook, Alabama was where I actually graduated high school. But that would have been my fourth or fifth high school that I attended.
And it occurred to me right as I asked that. I should have asked that before we went on the air in case you did not and you were lifelong ashamed by it or something. Do you have any favorite places from those days of moving around? Like one town that you're just like, oh, I wish we'd stayed there. That was such a great place.
The one place, and I was actually older, this was after I graduated. We lived in Connecticut and we were only there for 4 months. And we moved in the winter. So it was this cute little two-story house, kind of in the middle of nowhere. We were like 30 minutes away from the closest town. And I thought it was magical. Like when we moved in, everything was covered in snow. So it's like as spring kind of showed up. So we realized our backyard, which we thought was relatively flat, was actually on like a 15-foot hill kind of going down. It was just all the snow that had packed up. So that was pretty cool. And we didn't get as much opportunity to really kind of check out that house as we would have liked to. But
and do you remember if that was north of 84 or south of 84?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I'm trying to...
Because I was about 20, 30 miles from the Connecticut border. So similar territory.
It's... Winstead, I want to say, was somewhere close by. But yeah, it was out there.
One of my favorite museums is in Connecticut, Mystic Seaport.
Oh, cool.
Living history sites. So, all right. So you're moving around. You graduate from high school in Alabama. And what do you think you're going to do with your life? You've taken some theater classes that you actually turned out to like.
Oh, I had no idea. And I think that's... So while my family wasn't military, I did join the military. And that was kind of my way to be like, okay, we keep moving around so much. There's no way for me to really kind of stay somewhere and go to school. And so joined the Navy and I was there for a couple of years. And when the time was time to move on, I moved out to Portland with some friends. And then that's where I met my husband, Eric, in 2011. So
now if Eric were here, I was going to ask him his story. So you can give a little bit of it.
Yeah,
he won't be quizzed later. So not going to be held accountable if you get something wrong.
He grew up, he didn't move around nearly as much as I did. He had a hometown. So he was just outside of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So kind of up there by Spokane. So that was kind of his story. He was up there and he came out to Portland and then he was here for a couple months, moved back, and then moved back to Portland because he was working in pharmacy. And that's when we met.
Okay. So backing up just a second, Navy, first, you know, the standard thank you for your service. But honestly, I'm in awe of people that sign up.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate that. Why the Navy? And was it just to buy some time in your life? Or what made you join the Navy of the possible branches?
At the time, I was going to community college for journalism, specifically photojournalism was my kind of big passion at the time. And they had what appeared to be a very kind of robust journalism program in the Navy. So that's initially what I went for. When I took the test, the score that I got was high enough to qualify for their nuclear program. So once that came up, they kind of dangled $20,000 in front of you. You're like, well, sure, I'll do that. So while I wanted to be a journalist, I went to the Navy for I was a nuclear propulsion engineer. So I studied kind of all the stuff to essentially operate the nuclear reactors on submarines and aircraft carriers. So there's that.
That's amazing. Which did you end up on? Submarine or aircraft or both?
Submarine was the one that I was going for just because I think the community and just kind of the how different it was kind of intrigued me. But being 6'5" in submarines did not work out too well.
That's what I was thinking because you are a big guy.
And I was right at the cutoff. So I almost there, which Carrie would have been cool too, but there's something about submarines that just kind of intrigued me.
Okay. So when I, being the ignorant person that I am, when I watch like Hunt for Red October, when you watch a movie like that, do you just think that's ridiculous? Or do you think, oh, they kind of nailed it?
There's some things that are kind of pretty spot on. And then there's other things you're like, all right, well, no one actually does that. But you know, it's very interesting because I guess it really depends on who you're down there with. So.
Okay. All right. And I should apologize once again. We're speaking to Adrian Morrison. Eric is not here from Port Hopper. And normally Alana would keep me on track. So you wouldn't be sitting here talking about submarines and you're like, why am I talking about submarines? But this is the way my mind works. So apologies to everyone that's listening. So what made you go to Portland though? What had you been there before? What was in Portland that got
it
you
was,
here?
purely because when I was getting out, I kind of had a couple options of going back with my family, going with some friends kind of in one place or going friends other. And I had some friends who lived out in Portland, and I was like, well, hey, we'll kind of go out there and get a place together. And there you go. And kind of, I didn't intend to stay here. It was just going to be just, you know, kind of a spot and then kind of figure my life out.
Okay. So when was the first time that either you and Eric both visited Astoria? What were your impressions?
First time would have been, oh my gosh, it would have probably been over 10 years ago. And I'll be honest, we drove through it and that was kind of it. Like it was a little rough when we kind of first saw it. And we didn't really explore it. It was honestly us just checking it out, drive across the bridge, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. I didn't really have too many. I was never really a big Goonies fan, so that wasn't like a big draw for me.
It's not sacrilegious. You can say it. It's okay. So
it was. I honestly didn't know too much about the town. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until we moved back in 2020 that it really started to catch our eye.
Okay. And what was it that caught your eye?
For me, I think it's not that it's a sleepy town, but it's a small town that kind of wants to be a bigger city kind of thing. Like it's kind of hard to like describe it. It's very much growing and it has a lot of potential out here, but it's nice to be able to go to a place and just see the history and not see it be kind of taken over by kind of tourism and all that, but still grow with it.
I always feel like it's a small town, but it's not Mayberry.
Yeah.
It's a small town that has so much stuff and so many things to do. You know, if you're an outdoors person, if you just want fine food, the restaurants, the museums, yeah, the outdoor trails and things, it feels like, okay, it's got the same small town familiarity of a Mayberry that,
yeah,
I know everybody and everybody knows my kids and knows me, but what would I do besides go play checkers with Floyd?
It's very, it has the history that it has is, I think, kind of what helps that, because so many of these small coastal towns, some of them very much put on a facade to kind of be like, hey, this is the cute little town. Like, Astoria doesn't do that. We're like, it is what it is. Like, take it or leave it. So
this is who we are. Yeah. And if you don't like it, then we don't care.
Pretty much.
Like it or not. Yeah. So you get out here and, is your anchor job that gets you here the column, or are you doing something else before you got hired at the column?
It was a couple of things. So the whole reason we moved out to the coast was we moved here with two very good friends of ours to open up a restaurant. This was right as COVID was starting. So this was still very much we're probably going to close down for a couple of weeks and, you know, things will go back to normal. We were very kind of didn't know what was going on. So thankfully we didn't open a restaurant, but we were out here. We're like, okay, we're here. We'll take our time. We'll find a way to make it work. So I had a couple just kind of little odd jobs here and there. Really kind of started. I worked in Seaside for a little bit, and then we decided to, like, if we're gonna stay here, we have to like live here. So we found our house here in Astoria, and then I was like, all right, well, I would like to live close or work closer to, you know, kind of like not have to do the Seaside drive all the time. So that's when I got the column position. And I think that opened up a lot of doors for us to do what we do now, because it got me involved in the community in a way that I never would have done before. And I think had I not had that and had that exposure to the people that we met, none of what we've done in the past 2 years would have happened. So
I assume you still love the column since you worked there for 2 years, 3 years?
2 years, yeah. So, almost 2 years, exactly.
So we are celebrating the 100th anniversary this year, mm-hmm, and you will be a part of that as a member of the community,
yeah,
just not as a staff person. So from your experience and meeting with the people that would come into the store and having worked up there and been one of the faces, what do you love about the column?
That's a good question.
Or what do you think is cool about it?
The kind of thing for me is just, for one, I mean, obviously there's a lot of history around it. But I think it's kind of neat because it's so kind of, you're kind of on top of the world when you go up there. And I love going up there and just I mean, you have the column itself and you can climb the column, you can see everything, but even just being at the parking lot, you go up there and you see like the view, we call it. You look over, you see Astoria, you see the bridge. But then, you know, if you turn to your right, then you've got, you know, the Columbia. And then you turn to your left and you've got this like what looks like a fake landscape painting of the two rivers and all that stuff. So it's very magical. And if you can go up there when there's like no one else up there, very few people, and on a foggy day when it's just that kind of blanket, it's awe-inspiring. It's a really cool kind of experience.
I am sitting here nodding with a huge smile on my face, and I didn't want to interrupt that because that was perfect, and that captures so much of what I've thought since I mean, I've always loved the column, mm-hmm. and I've told visitors since I got here that that's where every tour to Astoria should start, regardless of whether you're going to climb it or not. But I didn't realize that it is such an incredibly different world up mm-hmm. there. I mean, it could be raining down here and sunny up there. It could be just raining down here and snowing up there.
I mean, even today, they're closed today because it's high winds. And I remember I'd be up there and I'd close down. People like, why? And I was like, well, I realize it's probably only 15 miles down there, but up here it's like 82. So, you know, we got to do what we can.
All right. So you and Eric are working different jobs, but you really want to do something for yourself and you want to work together. I assume that was part of this deal. So what was the next step?
So Port Hopper has always kind of been something that we've kind of dreamed about. It's taken on many different forms as we've kind of thought about it and done things. But we were here and we were just kind of talking about like, all right, so if we were to kind of do our own shop, what would we want to do? What would we want to bring here? And we've always been so inspired by travel and other places all around the world, but we've never been able to travel. So our way to do it was always like going Pier 1, World Market, places like that. So we were like, well, let's do something like that, but our way, in a way that's as authentic as we can do it. So that's kind of how it started. And it took on a couple of different iterations, but really, I think what made it what it is the space that we're in. Because it just transforms it all.
So describe where we're talking about and then the state of it, because I remember looking in those windows and I think we even, the Historical Society put some stuff in the windows.
At one point
long ago. Something. Yeah.
So it's 943 Commercial Street. And if you kind of do your kind of turn coming into downtown, it's kind of one of the first big kind of like retail buildings on the side. We share this space with Lonely Crab and Trace Bros. And it honestly never even entered our mind because it's, if you saw it before, it was shuttered. It had a chicken wire in front of it. It had, we never saw it when it was at its kind of worst, but we've seen pictures and had people talk about skylights had kind of busted out. Pigeons were living in there. So when we were thinking about the space, it never even like, it didn't come into our mind.
For a long time, locals, it was one of the properties owned by the Flavelle family, and it had been in an incredible state of disrepair. And I do remember you could see the chicken. Oh my gosh, it felt like a chicken coop. The bottom of the floors just covered with pigeon droppings.
Yeah.
So you fell in love with this building.
We did. So it happened one day. We were kind of like, all right, if we're going to do this, kind of what spaces are available? So we literally came downtown one day and just kind of started walking. And we walked by it. And if Eric was, I have to give Eric all the credit for finding the space because we walked by and they had tarps up, but there was a light on and there was a door open. He wanted to go in and I said, no, they're working on it. But he noted the address and he went home and he was able to found who purchased the building and who owned it. And he reached out. He called and left a voicemail. So when he did that, a couple months later, they called back and said, hey, we're working on the space. We're looking to have it kind of, you know, in a couple months. But if you're interested, like, we'll show it to you. And we walked in. And I can't just, all of a sudden, all these fireworks started going off. Like, we could do this here. We could do this, that. It's a two-floor space. They spent 5 years renovating that. And they brought it back to what it looked like in the 20s. Is all I can think. They spent so much time and so much effort and attention to detail to make sure that looked like what it looked like back then. The skylights are all back intact. Our upstairs is, it's fully functional. We've got everything kind of up there now. So it's become such this pristine little just spot that I can't imagine doing what we do anywhere else now. So it's if you haven't been in, I mean, it's, I would love for people to stop in to see our shop, but I mean, just to see the space and see what's happened, I think it's worth it.
And everybody should, because it is a beautiful space. And, you know, I do not remember it when there was anything in there before that. I've not been here in town long enough for that. I know many people remember it was clothing stores and they did shopping in there. It is like stepping back, at least the building, to the 1920s, and then you look around and see what your store is, and it's an amazing place. So talk a little bit about the store and what you sell.
We sell a little bit of everything, really. I mean, if you've ever been into like World Market or Pier One, that's what inspired us. But we bring in decor, just all kind of different things from all around the world. We've got global cuisine that we've brought in. We do a lot with local artists as well, because Astoria is still a part of the world and we want to kind of showcase it off. So we have this nice kind of little eclectic collection of just things that you wouldn't expect to see, and just things that you've never seen before, hopefully, and kind of like make it feel like a dreamlike space in the best sense of the way.
So I know there's probably no way to tell for sure, but do you have some mix of locals that go in there and kind of see what's new? Or is it all tourists coming off? I know the cruise buses stop in front of your place, which may be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not sure which.
We for the most part, it's pretty good. It's kind of, in the summer especially, it's very heavy on the tourist side. As we kind of go into the winter, we kind of see more of the locals who come in. But we have a fairly sizable local community that comes in kind of continuously. And I think with what we change our product enough that it's always different when you walk in. Today, right now, we're doing a whole floor move on the bottom floor. So it's just, we're always changing, always evolving, and just bringing in something new.
So what's, before we run out of time, what's your website or phone number? You've already given the address, but give it again, how people would find you.
Yeah. So Port Hopper, downtown Astoria, 943 Commercial Street. You can also check out porthopper.com. That's pretty sweet and easy, and you can check that out, kind of see what we have going on there. We have some social media presence, so you can go to our Instagram there and kind of check that out. But I mean, the best way to kind of capture it is just to step inside and take a look.
Definitely, I agree with that. So in 30 seconds left, you said that the store is a little bit of that you always wanted to travel, but you couldn't. So you suddenly somehow get $1 million and you could travel wherever you want. You can close the store for a week. Where would you go?
Oh my gosh, I would love to go to Norway, which probably wouldn't be good for like merchandise wise, but I've always wanted to go and do one of those like really cool like tours on the fjords and all that. That's always been a deep passion of mine. Excellent. And then India.
In the same trip or afterwards?
probably the same trip, if we can make it work out.
All right. I love that you didn't even hesitate, and you smiled and lit up and you knew. So someday I hope that you do get to Norway. That'd be great. So I've been talking with Adrian Morrison. Eric couldn't make it, but it's Port Hopper, and I think you're a great addition, both of you, to the town. And
well, thank you.
Even though you don't work at the column anymore, you're still a huge asset to the town. So thanks for listening. Go make some history, and we'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.